I live at the very north end of Miramar. We are actually the first house that is in La Porte, but our address is Miramar, and we buy our water from Shore Acres because our house was built in 1927 before La Porte came out that farmed water. And so we have a bulkhead that held break during ice. The water came over and came to the house, but it didn't break. And it's washing out on the Shore Acres side. And so Larry and I really like the wraparound thing that they put there, and because it will protect our bulkhead, but it'll also protect y'all in case our bulkhead gives way. It'll still protect your end, but it'll protect our side too. So thank you for taking care of that, because we've really been concerned. And we hope this gets done before the next hurricane.
And I will say, honestly, I mean, your bulkhead is very nice. It would be nice if we could afford to build something like that along the whole shoreline, but I think that's much more expensive per foot than things that you're building these days.
I think the guy who put in the bulkhead in Galveston lived in our house at one point. So I think he built a mini seawall.
Yes, sir.
I guess during the beginnings of the studies of this process that we're going through now, there was, locating of the storm drainage, the surface drainage alongside the street.
Yes.
Is that going to change per se, or is it going to be enhanced?
No, we're not planning any changes to it now. If the city elected to make some changes, you know, along with this project, it would be a good time to do so if there's some needs. But that said, we have had discussions about in that very narrow area that we may potentially need to put one or more drain inlets, and the 24-inch storm drain is basically running right underneath there. So I think if we have to do that, it would be some minor, minor addition to tap into that. But for the most part, we're trying not to do utility work because we're trying not to add cost if we can avoid it.
So no, that means no lighting.
No, we're not adding any lighting either. Now there was some discussion, and we're not putting it into this, but about potentially putting a water fountain at one or both ends. But again, we're not putting that in this. That would be more of a city issue.
What's the purpose of the palm trees?
The purpose of the palm trees? John's our palm tree. John can tell you the species.
The purpose of the palm trees. As I mentioned earlier, and we showed the slides, and we talked about the existing Canary Island palms that line the Shore Acres Boulevard from Broadway or old 146 to the bay, and the thought is that the palm trees along the bay, along Miramar Park, would be a continuation of that cultural artifact for the city of Shore Acres, and it does give some shade, but it also gives some definition and reinforcement of the promenade and the shoreline. The two vista points and the overhead structures, we simplified those a great deal, but we kept a minimal overhead structure to act as a signal, or at least it identifies where those, from a elevation standpoint, you see them. And then we added a couple palm trees on either side of those entrance walks. So it really, the answer to the question is, it reinforces the linear walkway, and it builds on the history that you have on Shore Acres Boulevard as the Canary Island Palm, as the city of Shore Acres Palm.
Okay, that's what I wanted to ask first. What's going to be the height of the palm tree stem?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a really good question. How old are the palm trees that are on Shore Acres Boulevard? They weren't in the 1930 area. We bought the house on 214 Sylvan. I don't think we planted the palm tree. Maybe we did. We've had a Canary Island palm there in 1967, 68, and I remember mowing it, and you couldn't walk under the palm tree, okay? So you go by and look at 214 Sylvan, and there's a Canary Island palm, and it may...
That may be...
It died?
That
may maybe be, it died. It may be 14 or 15 feet, or maybe 12. I don't know. We just have to go measure it. They grow very slowly, and they are expensive. They're expensive if you get 8, 10, 12-foot Canary Island palms. I did get some pricing from a nursery in South Texas for 3 to 4 feet of trunk. You know, 3 feet, 3 feet of trunk, 4 feet of trunk, delivered to the site, not planted, including freight, is about $175 a piece. You multiply that times three, $450, $500, probably a planted price for a palm that's got 3 feet of trunk. So that's $50 of trunk foot, okay? So you just kind of do the math. They're expensive to get them large.
Is that using the same trees? The same
using the same variety, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
My motive for asking that question was basically what would be the obstruction to the view of planting a line of palm trees along the shore? You know, because obviously the higher from the ground level to the base of the foliage, mm-hmm. the more visibility you
sure,
have.
Sure, sure.
Granted, then you got to buy a bigger...
Yeah, you buy the bigger ones, you can look under them. They're spaced 60 feet on center. I mean, we've aligned them with the property lines. So they're aligned with the property line. So if you live along Miramar Drive and you're standing in the middle of your property, your view, and especially all the new houses, obviously your first floor is, what, 17 feet? You know, 17 feet above grade. So I guess, yes, you could say there's some obstruction, but you've got 60 feet of view window nominally from the properties along Miramar Drive.
And the advisory committee was a concern of the advisory committee, too. And I think, Nancy, you chimed in on it. Nancy's house overlooks a pond. Go ahead.
Yeah,
chime in now.
Oh, since they've come up actually two different times. The palm trees that are along Miramar now were actually planted with a grant back in the mid-1990s. And I remember when we got the grant for those, they had the same questions about Do we want those aren't canary palms, they're smaller, thought those are fan palms or whatever out there. And we have these same questions
cheaper.
Come up.
They're cheaper,
yeah. But it comes up the same thing. Somehow you're used to palm trees in the setting of a waterfront, and they were an enhancement.
An enhancement,
not really a blockage. But then I was telling Jay also, right in our house now, which is on the water now, in Seabrook, I have a palm. It happens to be the height of it is right in front of whatever that is my window that looks out of my office. So if you thought about it, you think that palm tree is obstructing my view of the bay, but it doesn't. Again, somehow the palm tree has become a part of the view and is an enhancement to it as well.
It helps frame the views.
Yeah.
I mean, it really, I know when we planted the palms out here along the swimming pool, and I think I actually drew a drawing once upon a time that had those palm trees on it, there was all this concern is going to block our view, but views, you know, it helps frame views and it gives you some scale, pedestrian scale, and I'm repeating myself, but I think it builds on the framework and the infrastructure, the cultural infrastructure of the city of Shore Acres.
And it would be nice to do canary palm shoots, but they are expensive and they are slow growing.
Yeah.
So I think kind of down the road when we start putting it around. Both the way the pros and cons then and the additional cost for the more expensive palms versus
right.
what monies may be available for less expensive palms. I wouldn't want everybody to be getting too hung up on the detail at this point of exactly what breed of palm it is. That's maybe somewhere down the road to make a trade off between size, cost, the breed, and all the other things.
But fortunately I mean, the Canary Island palm, as we can see, the existing ones, they are slow growing, but they're cold hardy. I mean, we're getting global warming, maybe we're getting global cooling, but they're cold hardy, and they're very durable. And if you've ever seen one of them with the roots eroded, it's like is it Medusa? Who has the it's like, I mean, they have roots that are, I don't know, you know, inch and a half in diameter, and there are like 1,000 of them. I mean, they really are anchored well the way they grow.
That's a really good question, and we did go another part of our team. We have an environmental consultant who's working on the permitting, but also, you know, very familiar with native plant species, etc. We explored that a little bit. I think in terms of using plants to address the erosion issue, there's just too much wave energy on this part of the bay, so I don't think it's there. We did talk to them about, you know, what we could possibly look at on the top end of the structure, and they kind of scratched their head quite a bit and said, you know, they weren't coming up with a whole lot. You know, we talked at one point, you know, and I think their native live oak trees potentially would be another option along the shore, but then you really do get more of a visual obstruction. So the palm trees, you know, narrow that down quite a bit. I mean, you're absolutely right that the grants do really focus on the ecological benefit, and that's one reason we want to keep this oyster. We've got a pretty wide toe here, and you know, and this is, as everybody probably is around here knows, I mean, this is the prime spot on the bay for oysters. The salinity is just right in the right bracket. So we're hoping that that can help win some points for us. You know, we would very much like to do more ecological type stuff, but I think it's just a really hard fit for the site. And, well, I can say crepe myrtles are probably about they're probably about the hardiest thing that I've ever seen. But I don't know if you want to.
I think granted the native comments about native plant material and native grasses, but I think in this location, the view is paramount. From a maintenance standpoint, if we can keep the grass green and keep it mowed, I think having that open space for doing other things, kite flying or just open space to do for sort of free play or enjoyment of the bayfront, I think that's, I mean, we've taken a very minimalist, taking maintenance and access, we've really taken a very sort of simple but I believe elegant approach to getting people so that you can walk along the shore, and you always want to walk, I mean, we talked about where's the walk go, but you always want to walk as close to the water as you can, and that's kind of where the action is, I mean, and so that's why the walk is pushed up to the edge of the rivet, and then the palm trees, and there are other palms, but the palm trees then, as I said before, help reinforce that linear walkway, and it also kind of reinforces where the edge of the park is. So I think those are the approach of the sort of native trees, vitex or crepe myrtle. I don't think native, right? Those are all low growing. I mean, those they conflict with the approach of the structuring the views, defining it with the palm tree, and not obstructing the big panorama of galaxy.
Comment about the having this walkway so close to the water and not having any kind of handrail or obstructing children or carts from going over and onto the rocks like has happened in Galveston on occasion. You need to consider that possibility. You're going to have children on skateboards or bicycles going off the edge and getting themselves impaled on things that shouldn't be there. I'm from experience. just some sort of structure, even if it's just a curve, to keep them going over.
I was going to say, I think that's a very good suggestion, and we probably will add a curb along there. I'm trying to avoid a handrail.
Right.
But, for sure. There's going to be 7 foot of flat. And one other thing to note, too, is about being impaled, there's not going to be any rebar.
Right.
Getting rid of the rebar.
Oh, yeah, we took care of that after the Joshua.
I've got a 12-year-old son that I've pulled off of that riprap many times. And,
what you're talking about as far as the top path, is it going to be that kind of rock or is it going to be this kind of rock?
It's going to be more of
this type
of lower rock. I'm not sure. She's got a picture.
It's from Seabrook. I happen to be down there this weekend. It's by the jetties in Seabrook.
Okay, yeah. There is one type of stone that you'll see, like on the Galveston Sea, or the groins in Galveston have the nice cut granite block, and those are beautiful. You know, they come in, I think they're, 8 or 10 ton pieces. They bring them one at a time on a single truck, and they're incredibly expensive, and we're just not even going to go there. But they are really nice if you could buy them. Yes, sir.
Has any consideration been given to putting crushed granite instead of concrete?
For the walkway? Yeah. Yeah, we had some discussion about that. I think, like Nancy said, it's really part of the function of that sidewalk as well is to prevent any scour on the backside of the structure. We would maybe normally put a little bit wider crest on the structure. In order to protect it from being undermined from the backside, being flanked, if you will. In this case, that's part of the function that sidewalk is going to be providing. And we did that because we're trying to keep it, you know, as narrow as we can and preserve as much park space as we can.
What about rail bed rock? Especially
like,
with you just granite rock,
yeah.
And it's 2.5 inch land.
Yeah.
I might know somebody that would.
I mean, we can certainly look into it. You mean just for the walkway portion?
Walkway or part of the, you know, how much small?
We do have the bedding stone, which I forget the size right now. I've often used like a 3 or 4 inch minus for the bedding stone. So I'll be honest, we haven't quite got to the point where we're picking gradations yet, but. Unfortunately, I think we all grew up in a less litigious world than we have these days.
Okay, we're at an hour and 40 minutes. That's great. Just want, as a closing, want to remind everybody that you can go to the city website, to the Miramar Shoreline Project. You're going to be able to see all this presentation. You're going to be able to hear the audio if you want to revisit some of the comments that were made. You can also see everything we've done up to this point. And most importantly, you can leave a comment. You can hit the comment button, and it's going to go directly to every one of the members of the advisory group. So we'll take that into consideration by sending all that to Larry, and he sees it too. So I'd like to say thank you very much, one, for all my neighbors to come out and offering your opinion on stuff like that. That's what we're really looking for. And two, Larry and John and Fang Lee and them for doing, well, we're paying you for it, but thank you for coming. And unless there's anything else, I guess we'll call it adjourned. Thank you very much. Oh, be sure and sign the yellow page, the yellow paper on your table. That's part of that whole program.